The key was using shock to reduce adults to a childlike state. But these techniques don't only work on individuals. They can work on whole societies. A collective trauma, a war, a coup, a natural disaster, a terrorist attack puts us all into a state of shock.
So, Johan, in the latest issue of Reason, you have a piece debunking the latest book from Naomi Klein, which is called The Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism. Just generally speaking, what is Naomi Klein's thesis and why is it wrong?
Well, her thesis is very simple. Free markets are unpopular. Wherever someone wants to introduce them, people are opposed to it. So it means that free marketeers, libertarians, neoliberals have to implement their ideas in another way. They prefer shocks. That's her idea. Trying to shock people, voters, into submission in times of a natural disaster or a military coup or a war or something like that, then the free marketeers use the advantage that people are not on their guard. So they, in a very brief period of time, they introduce shock therapy, liberalize markets, lower taxes, lowering trade barriers, and so on. And, well, the problem with her book is that it's 500 pages long, and she absolutely fails to support anything of this. I mean, she fails to support, to give real empirical support that any free marketeer has ever said this. Her favorite villain is Milton Friedman, and she claims that, well, look at this quote where he says that in times of a crisis people begin to change their minds. And that's something that she pretends then, that the crisis is a war or a military coup or something really nasty. In the short film that accompanies the book, she even shows that quote above images of prisoners being tortured to give the impression that that's what Milton Friedman wanted. If you look at the context where Milton Friedman said that in the introduction to Capitalism and Freedom, it's obvious that he's saying, look, the Soviet Union, the Eastern European communist states, they create misery for their people, so they began to change their minds. In other words, not a shock he wanted to introduce from without. It's the problem that bad ideas lead to bad consequences and then people change their minds. It's very non-controversial, really, but it's something that she pretends is really... it's really that awful. And when Naomi Klein tries to show instances of this happening, shocks that led to military coups, dictatorships that really liberalized, well, yeah, she can cherry-pick a few examples of brutal people introducing liberal reforms, like in Chile, like in China, for example. But since 1980, almost every country on the planet has liberalized this market to some extent. So obviously there will be some bad people who did it and a lot of good people who did that. And you can't just look at the few situations where the bad thing's happening. You have to look at the broader picture. And then she's just wrong. The statistics clearly show the more democratic the country, the faster, the bigger the free market reforms have been.
Even these examples you demonstrate in your article are sort of not only just cherry-picked, but she kind of abuses the data and kind of manipulates. What is the most egregious example of that?
Well, personally, I think the worst one is China and the massacre at Tiananmen Square in 1989, where she claims that the protesters were really not protesting for democracy, free speech, and so on. They were really opposing free market reforms in China. And the Communist Party massacred them because they wanted to introduce even broader liberalization measures afterwards. But if the students were really protesting against free markets, well, then you would expect that somewhere in all their lists of demands they would mention this, but they don't. And you would also expect then to see the drastic liberalization measures happening after the massacre. It didn't. It was, in fact, the first period since 1979 where the reforms were stopped because the economic traditionalists in the party, they blamed the reforms for these protests. If you open up the markets, then we're going to see this kind of chaos. So they won out and they almost managed to turn the tide back. And it took 3 years of hard work from some of the more free market-oriented people in the Communist Party to get the reforms back on track.
I just want to point out, I love that we are at a point in history where I can sit across from somebody who will very, very seriously say the phrase to me, the free market-oriented people in the Communist Party. Klein seems to have an obsession with Milton Friedman, and he becomes in this book a sort of demonic figure.
Milton Friedman. Friedman believed in a radical vision of society in which profit and the market drive every aspect of life, from schools to healthcare, even the army. He called for abolishing all trade protections, deregulating all prices, and eviscerating government services.
And a lot of that is tying Milton Friedman to the Chilean dictatorship of Augusto Pinochet. Why is she wrong about that?
Well, yeah, she claims that Milton Friedman was an advisor to the Chilean government. And what really happened was that, yes, he visited Chile at one point. It was a private foundation that invited him for lectures. He did meet with Augusto Pinochet once in 45 minutes, and he even wrote him a letter saying that your old ways of managing the economy is disastrous, it's going to ruin the country, and you should really liberalize the economy instead. He was never an advisor. He never accepted a nickel from the Chilean government. He even rejected a honorary degree at a Chilean university because he thought that that could be seen as somehow supporting the regime. It was a regime that Milton Friedman claimed was terrible, despicable. But what he also said was that the best way of increasing the chances for democratic change and improving the lives of Chileans is to stop the hyperinflation, put an end to this centrally planned economy, liberalize it, making sure that there was growth, that people felt more secure, because then they would also demand democratic freedoms. It was the same kind of project, the same kind of idea that led Milton Friedman to go to communist dictatorships, like Yugoslavia, like the Soviet Union, like China, and to advise them to liberalize their markets, something that leftists rarely complain about when Friedman did. So you could really say that what Friedman was doing was he was implementing an anti-shock doctrine. He thought that if people were in shock, if they were constantly under in fighting for their lives, basically, and their survival, economically speaking, well, then no good changes would come of that in the long run. You have to lower inflation, you had to make sure that people had an opportunity to get a job. Only then could they begin to demand personal freedoms and democratic freedoms as well. Naomi Klein thinks that Milton Friedman is really the villain behind all bad episodes that you can see out there in the world, and claims that that's the results of his advice. She devotes a large part of the book to the Iraq War, how this was Friedmanite. She claims that Friedman was a neoconservative and really by implication in favor of an aggressive foreign policy, but the idea was to privatize the Iraqi economy. That's why all of this happened. And the problem with that whole idea is, of course, that Milton Friedman was opposed to the Iraq invasion. And she doesn't neglect to mention this for a lack of space. She's got 500 pages to do this. If you have that thesis, if you try to give the readers that impression, and you don't even mention that he was actually on the record opposed to it again and again, well, then you're obviously out to distort and deceive the audience.
Thanks for joining us, Johan. For Reason TV, I'm Michael Moynihan.